Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, my co-host, Mr. Felipe Leon. We got a lot of stuff here to talk about on the radio show. I don't even know if I'm live right now. I don't even know if it's... Yeah, I have no clue. It didn't even ring me in or anything like that. So anyways, let's talk some boxing here. We got a lot to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. So hopefully I am live. I'm not sure. So let's see. We'll find out right now. We will find out right now. Okay, so I'm getting some texts right now. So let's hope this... All right, so Felipe is trying to get on right now. I don't know. Sorry for the technical difficulties over here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Just give me 1 minute here. So let's figure this all out here. Because like I said, we got a lot of stuff here to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. Sorry, folks. I'm trying to figure everything out. I didn't hear no music. I have no idea if we are on live right now on the show. And this really sucks right now because I'm not sure if we're on. Anyways, so on the rundown, well, obviously we're going to talk about Gennady Golovkin versus Danny Jacobs. And then we're going to definitely talk about Gonzalez. On the controversial loss that he had. And then since we went on last week, we're going to talk about David Lemieux and his big win. So, but right now we're going to try to figure out if we are on live because I'm not sure. So I don't know if I'm talking and people can hear me or what. So give us 1 minute because we did. I was trying to get some guests on for tonight here on Leaving the Ring. So I'm not quite sure. Like I said, yeah, I'm not sure if I'm even on live right now. So give me 1 minute. Please allow me to figure this out. I apologize. Because I have no clue. If we are... Again, I apologize. I can't figure out if we're on live or not. Anyway, so let's talk some boxing here. All right. Let's just go on with the show. You know, if we're on live, if we're not, I don't know. So the highly entertaining 12-rounder, the undefeated Gennady Golovkin, defended his WBA, IBF, WBC, and IBO middleweight title with a close unanimous decision over fellow WBA champ Daniel Jacobs. Scores with 15-12 two times and 14-13. It was the first time Golovkin was taken to the 12th round limit while ending his 23-0 KO streak as well. The HBO PBO took place in the Madison Square Garden. Now, I mean, listen, we got tons and tons and tons of emails about this here. And Felipe, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, see, I heard no music. I don't know what happened here. So I wasn't even sure if we were on live at all, man. At all here.
Do we have callers?
I hope we are. No, we have nothing. I mean, I have a blank face right now. So I'm hoping that we're recording. It's kind of weird. Like I said, there was no intro. There was nothing.
Well, when we did a two-minute round, since the show wasn't set up, I had to manually play the intro song. So that might – and it still went out. So, and it's still recorded. So that's a good sign.
Okay. Well, anyways, we'll just keep moving along here and stuff. Let me ask you about this because of like I said, we apologize because we're really thrown off about this. I was trying to figure everything out here. I wasn't sure. I mean, literally, we went like 15 minutes trying to figure out. I was trying to figure out if we were live because I heard no music. I didn't know if you were on. I didn't see anything. And just like, I don't know. This is really shitty. Hate this stuff here. But I had it. And, you know, when this fight happened on Saturday night, me and you, we texted with Gabriel Montoya, and Gabriel automatically had Danny Jacobs winning. I watched the fight literally five times, and I got to tell you, beginning, I thought that Triple G won, but I talked to you yesterday, and I told you, man, I thought I had a draw. At the overall, what happened between Golovkin and Danny Jacobs is that there was no satisfaction of who was the clear winner between the two. Felipe, I don't know what you had because, you know, like I said, I talked to you briefly. In the beginning on Saturday, I think we both had the same score, which was 115-113. I had that. I think
no.
We had the same thing. Oh, you had 115-112.
I had 114-113.
Right.
So the only thing that separated the both men was the knockdown, and I had Gennady Golovkin winning. And, you know, I agree with you. It's a very close fight, very close. I mean, Jacobs, to me, was somewhat impressive. No, not somewhat. He was impressive. He was able to box. And what I've said on the other shows that I've been on, like Boxeo Tijuana in Spanish on every Tuesday, is that Daniel Jacobs was the better boxer, but Gennady Golovkin was a better fighter that night. You know, excuse me. Jacobs was able to box. He was able to use his height. He was able to use his reach. He was able to use his footwork, his lateral movement somewhat, although Gennady Golovkin did succeed in closing off the round, closing off the ring most of the time. But still, Daniel Jacobs.
You're coming
was
in really
to,
bad, dude. I mean, really, honestly, you're coming in, like, in and out really bad. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
No, not really. Go ahead. Try it again.
Check. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Check.
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. So, like I was saying, that night, to me, Daniel Jacobs was the better boxer, but Gennady Golovkin was the better fighter.
Stop going through. I'm on live right now. I'm on live right now. I'll hit you back.
Daniel Jacobs was able to... box, use his height, use his length, use his reach, use his lateral movement to get out of the way of Gennady Golovkin's come forward attack. But at the end, Gennady Golovkin was the man that scored the better punches. I do agree that Daniel Jacobs scored combinations. He was throwing punches in combinations, but the harder, more effective punches throughout the night were landed.
You're coming
by
in really bad, dude. It's coming in. You're barely even coming in. Like, you're coming in and out like a wave.
I hear you. I hear you.
This is what
fine,
I got
so
with Daddy. Yeah, this is what I got with Danny Jacobs. I mean, Danny came in with a game plan. Was able to execute it. I know a lot of folks were complaining about his weight, but that was all explained. You know, I mean, anybody believe that Danny came in with a weight advantage is a fool, because, you know, Triple G comes in at the same, almost the same exact weight. So there was no weight advantage. The thing that I had with this is, and this is from the beginning, okay? This is from when everybody was on the Triple G train. We had Abel Sanchez on the show. And my biggest question to Abel Sanchez was, when somebody can finally take your punch, when somebody can finally have a game plan and adjust to what you do, how good and how well adjusted can you be? And we saw that. And I think we're seeing that more and more. Now, the excuse of, you know, that he got in with 175 pounder, I don't buy it. Why? Because he dropped Danny. You know, Danny's legs might not have been there in place. But here's another thing, which I've been seeing a lot, Felipe, and you answer me this. You get a lot of fans right now saying, well, he was on his toes. He was really never set on his punches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The punches weren't solid. But Lomachenko, here's a guy that doesn't really sell on his punches until later in the fight. There's a similarity to what Danny Jacobs was doing at Triple G. You know, pity pat, and then one big shot in between the pity pat. So which one is it? You know, we can only praise one guy that does a certain style and gets away with it. We can't praise the other guy. Don't understand that, you know. And I think a lot of people too, at the same time, when we see people complaining about what Danny Jacobs was doing, but really complaining about what Gennady Golovkin wasn't doing, I don't understand that. As a fight fan, I think that because you have there's almost like a shock there that the guy wasn't doing what you expected, so you're going to blame the other guy but not give him the credit. That's kind of hard for me to accept and to also to praise at the same time as a fight fan. I don't get it. I don't understand that. You have to call for what Triple G wasn't doing correctly. And to sit there and say that Triple G, you know, his jab was the only thing that won that fight, and Danny did nothing behind it, it's ridiculous. I don't know what you think about that, but I think that's just stupid. It's dumb to sit there behind there and go, well, you know, I'm not happy with you know, the fact that Danny didn't fall and stay down. Or that
I don't
Danny
agree with that at all.
Plan.
I don't agree with that at all. I mean, I had it a close fight. I had it 114-113. I haven't taken anything away from Daniel Jacobs. Did
I never said that you did?
I'm
saying is that people on Twitter,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't go by what people say on Twitter. Quite honestly, you know, I mean, it is what it is. People, you know, they have diarrhea of the mouth on Twitter or diarrhea of the fingers on Twitter, and they just think that because it's only 150, 40 characters, they can say whatever they want without, you know, backing anything up with any concrete evidence.
Right. Let me ask you this, because it's not just people with the diary of the fingers. There's also people in the diary of the fingers in media. I mean, I literally saw people that were supposedly part of the media, right? Supposed to be respectable people of the media that were being big crybabies behind this too. I thought that was crazy. To see particular people from a particular website, right? Websites, not just one, to say that I'm going to close my Twitter account because I don't agree that Danny Jacobs was this competitive, you know, participant against Golovkin. I mean, are we that big of a crybabies, dude? Are we that bad?
This is the way I see it. You know, have we seen bad decisions? Yes, we even saw maybe a bad decision, maybe a bad decision that night. But boxing is a sport that's judged on appreciation. There's three caveats of how to judge a round, because these fights are judged by round. Each round is a 3-minute fight in itself. We've heard that before. And each round is judged with effective punching, ring generalship, and defense. Okay? So that night, you put those three things together, and round by one, who won more rounds? If you scored at 114, 113 like I did, and this is professional boxing, if you scored at 114, 113 like I did, then you had an even fight. You had a draw, but the only difference was that knockdown in the fourth round of Gennady Golovkin. And like I said, this is professional boxing, and in professional boxing, the goal is to inflict punishment on your opponent. In boxing in general, the goal is to hit and not be hit. But in professional boxing, it's to inflict punishment on your opponent. That's why there's smarter gloves and there's no headgear. And Gennady Golovkin, at one point in the fourth round with two straight right hands, was able to inflict that punishment enough to drop Daniel Jacobs to the canvas and that way get an extra point in his favor. And in my card, that's why he won the fight. But the fight was even.
This is the fourth round, though. I mean, he got that out of the fourth round, which was honestly, it was a flash knockdown because Danny Jacobs got back up. He smiled at him.
But
what happened immediately after that, though?
But why do you categorize it as a flash knockdown? Yes, it was a flash knockdown, but it did.
Oh, it was
count
a flash
knockdown.
He got back
but it
up.
It did count.
It was a flash knockdown, Felipe. Let's be honest. He
got
back up.
That's fine.
He got back up, but he still went down. No, yeah, he went down, and he got
immediately back up.
But can you honestly sit there and say that? Okay, wait. No, I'm gonna minimize it because I'm asking you a question. Can you honestly say that Triple G had control of the complete fourth round after the knockdown? I don't think he did. Danny was immediately dropped. He got back up. He smiled at him. He went straight to the guard. He blocked shots, and then he continued to do exactly what he did in the first and second round, which is a counter punch and finish off with some flurries.
I'm a traditionalist. So if you get dropped, nobody doesn't matter what you do afterwards, you got dropped.
So you don't score anything after
that.
You score because the guy gets dropped. You don't look at anything the other guy that's been dropped. I done. Come on.
10-8. The name of the game is to knock your opponent out, and you got dropped. So 10-8 on that round.
Repeat that again because you're going in and out. You're going like a pause. There's a big pause in between what you're saying. What you said, 10-8 what?
You can't do anything better than getting dropped. It doesn't matter how good you do the rest of the round. You got dropped. So you get scored the 10-8.
That's total bullshit. No, it's not. Come on, Felipe. Listen. You can be dropped and you can still win the round if you get back up and you block the punches.
So let me ask you this. So in baseball, you hit a home run, then the pitcher strikes out the next two guys. You still hit the home run. You still score that
that's
round.
That's baseball.
You still,
that's completely
yeah, you
different.
Still,
that's
still
a, that's,
score
a, that's
that
a score. Listen,
you still,
listen.
You still
no
score
way.
That round.
Wait, no way. No. Hold on. There is no way you can compare baseball to boxing because here's the fact about this. You could score something out of the arena, and there's no way of erasing that. With boxing, I can drop you, and you can take over the round after you've been dropped.
But you still got dropped.
There's no comparison.
You still got dropped.
That
you
is the difference between boxing and baseball.
No. You still went down. Your opponent did what he needed to do, which was to drop you, to inflict enough punishment on your person to drop you, to for that split second separate you from your consciousness and drop you. Whether it was a flash knockdown, whether you're standing off balance, you still made a mistake and you got dropped. So it doesn't matter if you.
So you're telling me throughout boxing. Okay, so you're telling me throughout boxing history that there have been particular fighters that have been dropped and could never gain back, make it in an eight or like, you know, in an 8-8 round or an even round?
It would go back to 10-9. The way you would score it, you would go back to 10-9. If you would have given that round to Daniel Jacobs despite getting knocked down.
You're breaking up. I don't know. You're breaking up really bad. You know, you're fuck,
I'm
man. Really, this is a really shitty stream. Because like I said, you're just coming in now. I'm getting bits and pieces of what you're saying. So, what I'm hearing. This is what I'm hearing from you. You got a 10-9 round. If somebody gets dropped, which could be the strong possibility, you know. At the same time, though, the conscience have been saying is that, you know what, if that happens, we got to learn how to give back a 9-9 round. And with Danny Jacobs, he got dropped, but I didn't see him lose the last minute of that round. I saw him actually make that comeback. It wasn't a dominant round from Triple G. I didn't see that.
I didn't see Danny Jacobs do enough to win back the round.
I did. I saw him not. Look, I saw a Triple G that got the knockdown, but I didn't see a Triple G that was like dominant. You know what I mean? Which I thought that he should have been. I thought he should have been a very dominant person. I didn't see a scared Danny Jacobs. I didn't see a guy that retreated.
Why would that affect the way you score a fight? You got two guys
because
fighting.
If you drop a guy,
if
you drop
ridiculous.
A guy, Felipe, I'll tell you what's ridiculous. When you drop a guy and you can't be dominant over the guy to show me that he was hurt completely
you
on
said
that
it yourself,
round.
It was a flash knockdown. You said it yourself. It was a flash
okay.
knockdown.
So if it's
so
a
he
flash
wasn't
flash
hurt.
Knockdown,
so he wasn't
it should
hurt.
Be
okay,
a 9-9 round. Listen,
no,
if it's
no,
a flash knockdown and the other guy takes over the round, Felipe, if the other guy takes
over the
minute round, come on.
I didn't see him take over the round. So to me, it was 10-9. Then you scored 10-9, but nobody else did. Nobody else scored in a 10-9 round except for you because I didn't see him take over the round. Yeah, he did well. He showed that he wasn't hurt, but he didn't take over the round. So it's a 10-8 round.
No. It could have been. I mean, no, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you. I mean, that's what they were scored, but that's not what I saw. And that's what I was talking about when he comes with swing rounds. I think people can argue about that. You know, going off of the other rounds that were happening there. Now you're saying I'm choppy too. Yeah, I mean, dude, I think the stream is just really shitty. You're coming in now. I'm coming in now. I'm not really sure. Right now, you're coming out. You're coming in fine. But going on to the other rounds and stuff, I mean, there were swing rounds. There were some rounds there that it was very questionable who was dominant.
Let me ask you this. You just said it yourself. You know, there's some questionable rounds. There were some swing rounds. So can you say without the benefit of a doubt that Daniel Jacobs really won that fight?
I can't say that. I can't say the same thing about Golovkin. I don't know whether or not he was the most dominant guy in that round, in that fight, where you could say confidently he was the winner.
I'm not saying dominant. I'm saying did he win that fight? You could win the fight and win by a win
I don't
by
think
a
neither one. Honestly, I think they both walk away. Honestly, well, the majority is this. And I think the majority need to fess up because of the fact that they looked at Triple G as this incredible Hulk figure in boxing is that the most people figure this, that he
that's
was,
the issue there. That's the issue there. That, that that's
but that's
the
what
issue.
I'm trying
exactly.
to say that
no.
nobody wants to accept the fact that it was a draw to me.
No,
I got a draw,
but that's the issue is that people are coming in with these preconceived notions of what these fighters are supposed to do once the bell rings. Okay. They're coming in with these preconceived notions because they bet money on it, or they made their predictions public and they talked to 10,000 of their friends and told them exactly what the fight was going to happen. And then when that doesn't happen, then they want to justify what went inside, what happened inside the ring. But that's not judging a fight. When you're judging a fight, you just have to judge the fight as that 3-minute fight per round, without caring who each guy is, without bringing in into that fight what each fighter has done in the past. That 23 knockdown streak that Gennady Golovkin has should not sway you in the way that you're going to judge that first round once the bell rings. You're not expecting, oh, he has to knock him out. If he doesn't knock him out, he doesn't score a big punch, then he doesn't win the round. That does not exist in judging a boxing contest. You cannot judge a boxing contest coming in with preconceived notions of who these fighters are. At the end of the day, once that bell rings, you got a guy in the red corner, you got a guy in the blue corner, and whoever does better in that round wins the round in your scorecard. I've spoken to plenty of judges, and I say, what's the easiest way for layman's terms, without putting all these other terms in effective punching and ring generalship, what's the easiest way for you to judge a fight? That at the end of the round, you ask yourself, who would I rather be in that round? The guy in the red corner or the guy in the B corner, in the blue corner? Who would I rather wanted to be in that round? And you got to say one or the other guy, you know? And if you come into the fight thinking, well, Gennady Golovkin should do this and this and this, and Daniel Jacobs should do this and this and this, and you judge a fight with those preconceived notions, then this is the kind of conversations we end up having on Twitter, you know?
Because I agree with you. But look at the notions that are being given out right now. I'm giving you, this is what happened. This is how you should judge it. Now, when you go off of what people are saying that are outside of the notions of how you should judge a fight, it's ridiculous. One is that Danny Jacobs came in as a lightweight. Well, so did Triple G.
Light heavyweight.
Yeah, light heavyweight. You know, the other one is the, you know, oh shit. I'm sorry. I'm losing my train of thought because I'm trying to figure everything out over here. I'm trying to fix our sound and all that. So I'm emailing Blog Talk at the same time and stuff, you know. Giving the benefit, but saying we're only giving Danny Jacobs credit because he survived 12 rounds. No, we're not. We're giving Danny Jacobs credit because he actually came into a fight with a game plan. He actually had a team that helped him out to get him in shape and have a great game plan, you know? And that's something that, you know, let me ask you this, Felipe. This has been a long time where I've watched a team be a team, where I watched a middleweight contender have a team of players that looked at a fight at an overall and be the tower coaches to the field coaches. I saw that with Danny Jacobs. Now, did Danny Jacobs follow everything that was being pitched to him by his trainers? No. You know, he tried to run off of what he wanted to do. He got a little sloppy towards the end of the round. But at the same time, Triple G wasn't really listening to his trainer as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to go off of what he felt would have, you know, been benefit to him, would have been, more of an execution and his benefit, but he fell short. So both teams, actually both quarterbacks, weren't throwing the right passes with the right game plan of how to pitch their punches. They weren't doing the things that they were supposed to do, you know. So when I look at Gennady Golovkin and I look at Danny Jacobs, I go, okay, who was following whose game plan more? I honestly look at Danny Jacobs and I said he was following his. Where
where Triple G, well, he was just trying to be the defensive linebacker and was trying to tackle a guy that was never there to be tackled. And people were pissed off at the fact that Danny Jacobs wasn't there to be tackled. I don't understand that. You know, you got to give the guy you got to give the guy some credit. The guy,
I agree with you.
You know?
I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. I think that Daniel Jacobs had a masterful performance. He looked great. I think it's the best fight he's ever been in as far as what he did inside the ring. And I do agree with you that he followed the strategy that he and his team have put together for this fight, was to box, was to keep a distance, was to not let Gennady Golovkin on the inside and let him work in the close proximity. But it doesn't mean just because you were able to follow your strategy and do your strategy that you were able to impose your style on the other fighter. And that is the difference. Okay?
You don't think he imposed his style? Let me ask you this. You don't think that Danny Jacobs imposed his style, which was switch and hit? He went to the southpaw. Let me ask you this.
No, he
went to the southpaw. What?
He didn't impose his style.
Let me finish. He went to the southpaw. He confused Triple G. Triple G
didn't
execute that. He did not. He didn't make him pay.
I didn't see him be confused. I didn't see him be confused. And the way that
he didn't execute against
well,
that.
Well, why? Because he didn't knock him out.
Did you see Triple G dominate over a guy that went southpaw? Felipe, did you see a Triple G went
dominate
over? No,
that's
the
word. Get that word out of the vocabulary for this fight, because nobody dominated, and that's what you're coming in preconceived.
Then how are you scoring? Okay, so how are you scoring? That's why it's called the swing round. Then that's what that becomes confusing.
The fight was a draw, 6-6, but Gennady Golovkin scored the knockdown, so that's why he won in my scorecard by 1 point. Okay.
Right.
But dominate.
Okay.
But get that word dominate out of your vocabulary when it comes to this fight, because that's what everybody is expecting for Gennady Golovkin to do. Because
that's where everybody's going off the fact that Triple G had a clear win, and that's the one thing. That's the key word here on social media. People are going, well, that's a clear win. He had a clear, win in every round.
It wasn't every round. It wasn't every round, because if it would have been every round, it would have been 120-108, and it wasn't. It was 115-112 twice, and 114-113.
Right.
And that 115-112 should have been 115-113, because that's only by two rounds, but you get the knockdown. Okay? So again, actually, that's only on that scorecard, 115-112, he's actually only winning by one round, and then he's getting the knockdown by the extra point. Whereas the 114-113, it should have been a drop, but he's getting that extra point because of the knockdown. Okay.
Well, here's a good sign.
It wasn't a clear win. But let me just finish my thought, because you were saying Daniel Jacobs did not impose his style because Gennady Golovkin, because he was trying to box, and we agreed that he was trying to box and keep the distance, but Gennady Golovkin still scored more jabs than he did. So that proves to you that Gennady Golovkin didn't allow him to impose his boxing strategy, because he was able to score more jabs than he did.
Well, here's a good thing about this right now with Blog Talk, because we weren't sure if we were getting a knockdown, if anybody was able to tune in. We do have some calls here. So let's pass in some fight fans really quick, and let's hear some opinions. Because I think me and you, Felipe, are on the same page. But I think we're just throwing out some different views about what happened. I had it a draw. I did have Triple G winning the first time around, but after watching it a few times, I'm not too sure. So let's go with area code 623. You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, David? This is Adrian from Phoenix.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man? Yeah,
pretty
I can
good,
definitely
man.
Hear you, man.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hello? Okay. Yeah, you know, I just want to say I'm a fan of the show, and I also call into, Steve and Dave's show as well. So I just want to say I'm a huge fan.
Hey, appreciate it, brother.
But
so how did you score, man? What was your view about what happened Saturday night on the pay-per-view between Gennady Golovkin versus Danny Jacobs?
I agree with the 114-113 score, with the knockdown being the reason for Golovkin pulling off the win. He, like you said, he had a great jab. I wish he could have been more busy, you know, with the body. But like everyone's saying, Daniel Jacobs came prepared, and the way his style was offset Triple G from doing what he really did, you know, try to get that knockout. He just couldn't get it.
Right.
But I don't think it's so controversial like everyone makes it seem. The most controversial fight of the night was Chocolatito losing his title and losing his O. But I just, I don't get what the big controversy is. And we gotta appreciate, as boxing fans, he gave us 23 straight knockouts in a row. Like, every time Triple G fought, we were ready to see his next fight. You know, when's it, you know, Tom Loeffler, when's his next fight? Hey, Tom, you know, when's the next fight? He sold out the StubHub Center. He went to London, England. You know, they sold out the show with Cal Brook. He went to Madison Square Garden, sold out with David Lemieux. I mean, you can't get mad at, you know, Triple G for not getting the knockout. I don't get
why. Well, you got
people...
that old saying, though. I mean, look, you got the old saying, you're only as good as your last fight here. And I think I think it's true to the world with fight fans. We're a bit spoiled. When you have a guy, and I think this is why a lot of fans were pissed off on social media, is that when you have a guy that has such a winning streak like this, that you expect it to continue, mm-hmm. especially when you got a guy that so many folks were saying that didn't belong in the ring with you know, Triple G. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I had so many people, and I said this back last year, where I wanted to see Golovkin to get in there with a Danny Jacobs or Arison Lara. I wanted to see mm-hmm. a boxer that can move on him. And I had a rain of people go, why? Triple G would knock him out in four rounds. And then when we see this not happen, we see the reaction of people. I mean, literally, there was people, not just fight fans, but guys in the media going, I'm gonna close my... I'm finally shutting off my social media because, you know, I can't believe this. You know, I can't believe that people are questioning the power of Triple G. I mean, I'd like Triple G. Do I say I'm in the wagon where everybody else is with Golovkin? I was never like that. Even with when it came to mm-hmm. Lucas Matisse, I have questions. Did it me further say that Golovkin is a more human than machine? Absolutely. And that made me more of a closer fan. I'd like to – let me tell you this about this. And I don't know if I was telling this to Felipe or was Guillermo Montoya. I'm not really sure. But I said this to somebody. I go, the reason why I like Gonzalez is that he's not sitting on his talent. He's challenging his pound-for-pound status, which means that he could have stayed at a lower weight, which is 112, be big and dominant, and be this guy that never going to be questioned whether he's not his pound for pound because he looks so graceful in the ring, okay? He decided to say, let me put that on the line. Let me see where I'm at.
And you gotta
people
keep in
are
mind,
now
he
bashing
lost his trainer.
Him. Yeah, they're actually bashing him. They're actually shitting on his legacy now because he decided to say, hey, I'm going to move up, and I'm going to challenge bigger guys and see if my skill level can keep me at the level of the category you guys are putting me at. To me, that is more legendary. To me, that is more Hall of Fame status.
Exactly.
I love that.
And he didn't take a tune-up fight. He went straight at Cuadras and said, hey, let's do
right.
it. And he got – it was a close fight. He did get his face swollen up. He got to pull off the W.
But
let me
tell you this.
High fighter.
I agree with you. I agree with you to a certain extent, but come on. The reason that he also went to super flyweight, and I saw him at the weigh-in for his last flyweight champ title fight against William Arroyo on the undercard of Golovkin Wade last April, the guy was dying. He could barely walk. He was so...
a prisoner of war.
You know, he was dying because he could barely make the 112. So it's not like, hey, I'm going to go up to 115 pounds so I could, you know, try my skill. It's because he couldn't make 112 anymore. Okay?
That's bullshit.
So it's not
listen,
like
listen to me.
Wait a minute.
Bullshit.
Let me tell you this.
Wait.
I'm telling you,
Kell Brook,
I
Kell Brook moves up in fucking weight. Come on, bullshit. Kell Brook moves up in weight, and everybody praises that. Everybody goes, oh, my God, this guy, he's got such balls. But you can't do that for Gonzalez? Come on, man.
Hey,
come on. There's no give
and take. I'm just telling you, that guy went up. It's not because he went up because, oh, I'm going to try to, you know, match my skills.
He survived. He survived.
Kell
Brook survives with a puncher. But Gonzalez goes out there and displays skills, and then we're going to all of a sudden everybody's saying, oh man, this is the guy we put for pound? Really? Oh, my. That's just bullshit. I mean, you know, fight fans, we're such double standard people. You know, it's
hey,
bullcrap.
Hey, you're the one bringing up Kell Brook. I didn't bring up Kell Brook. I'm just telling you what the facts are with Kell Brook.
No, I'm telling
you
what fight fans are.
I don't care.
I'm telling you how fight fans are, though. I'm telling you the layout of how fight fans are. This is how fight fans are. They're going to praise Kell Brook, who said the exact same thing you're saying right now. I can't make this weight. He jumps up two weights, then gives a rough and tough to Golovkin and say, this guy's so brave. He's so tough. Where Gonzalez does the same thing, but he's more competitive. And guess what?
Hey.
Let me tell you this. Guess what? Stays in the weight division. Well, Kell Brook is saying, I'm going back down the weight, and I'm facing another guy, Spencer. The guy didn't have balls enough to stay where he said he was going to go. Come on.
He just went out there for the money.
Hey, guys, just to switch the topic, you know, great argument from both of you. But this is something that's been bugging me. A lot of people.
David Duenas, he's been bugging you? Yeah, he bugs me too.
No.
Oh, okay.
Come on, I'm a Mexican American with Mexican blood, and I'm proud of it. Why is everyone shit on Canelo? Canelo fought Mayweather at 22 years old. People at 22 years old are fighting on Velasco Theater, fighting on Top Rank Solo Boxeo. Canelo at 22, tried his best. You know, he did get outclassed. But he took on Mayweather. He fought Arizona Lara. He beat a decent Trout, even if it was a close fight. He went against James Kirkland, who's, you know, I know he goes on those long layoffs, but he's still a tough guy. But everyone always shits on him. And every time Canelo beats someone, gives you a KO of the year, people like Virgil Hunter say he has no balls. And then trainers like Derek James, the trainer for Errol Spence, calls Canelo a bitch. It's like, what do... Like, what do they have against Canelo? I understand he said, you know, in Mexico, you know, we don't fuck around. He's not calling out different races. He does what he does, but seriously, I don't know if it's PBC, people that work for the PBC or fighters for PBC, they never give Canelo a good shot. They always say he's going to lose. Oh, Americans going to outbox him. What happened gives you a KO of the year? Oh, okay. Well, you know, he'll lose to Triple G because – you know, he can't take a punch or whatever it may be. No one ever gives Canelo a fair shake. Why is that?
David?
I was going to let you, Felipe.
Let me tell you. Well, the first thing about the 22-year-old and taking on Mayweather and all that, we got to remember that Canelo started fighting at 15 years old. He did. He started boxing at 13. He was an amateur at 13, and 2 years later, he was a professional at 15 years old. So from 15 to 22, that's 7 years of boxing, professional boxing experience. You know, and the guys that are fighting at Velasco Theater, they had much more extensive amateur careers. They've gone pro at 18 because in California and the United States, I think there's only one state, I think it's Louisiana, where you could go pro before your 18th birthday. All over the United States, you got to be 18. So that's the difference there between the age, okay? Not the first Mexican fighter to go pro before the age of 18. Marco Antonio Barrera was also 15. Fernando Vargas. Morales, I think, was like 16 or 17. So there's a bunch of fighters that have gone pro before 18. I think you can't take a lot away from Canelo. I mean, he has faced the bigger and the bigger names of the sport. Obviously, Mayweather, Mosley.
Lara.
You know, Lara, who's still a champion, Trout, who was a champion, Miguel Cotto. But I think why people take away from Canelo is because the powers that be try to sell him as a better fighter than a lot of people think he is. Okay?
Let's be honest here, Felipe. Let's be honest. The powers that be have made Canelo more of a commercial than we're used to. As a Mexican American to Mexicanos, especially for Mexicanos, that, you know, if you look at the rankings of how our fighters have come up, it's been grit. These guys have fought their way to the top. You look at Barrera, you look at Eric Morales, you look at Salvador Sanchez, you look at Julio Cesar Chavez. The list goes on. It wasn't given to us. It wasn't given to us.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you, this is going to put it very simple and very easily, and for you to understand how the Mexican fan comes from. What was the last fight that you saw Canelo beat in a war? A war. In a back and forth, you know, brawl. And, you know, that's not his style. We know that. He's a counterpuncher. But even counterpunching Mexican fighters like Juan Manuel Marquez, who might be considered the best counterpuncher out there right now for Mexico, or Eric Morales, they've been in wars. When's the last time Canelo was in a war? Never. We never seen him in a war. The only time that we've seen him...
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. You know, when Canelo had a hurt lion, when did you see him go after him and take that person out? I mean, he had Miguel Cotto numerous times at a point where he was for the taking, and Canelo sat back and played it safe. I mean, that rubbed a lot of Mexican people wrong. I mean, it rubbed me wrong. I'm Mexican American.
Yeah, I agree with you. He should have knocked out Miguel Cotto because, like you said, Miguel Cotto, he was punching his left hook to the body that Freddie Roach praises him about, wasn't doing anything to Canelo. You know, I agree with you with that. But, like, other people like Kirkland, I know he didn't have Ann Wolf, but he was coming at him against the ropes, and Canelo went to war with him.
But that was by design, though, bro. Listen,
exactly.
When you got somebody by design, how much can you praise that? You know,
And that's why the Mexican fan and a lot of fans want him to fight Kennedy Golovkin, because they feel, or maybe not even that, now May 6th.
Julio Cesar Chavez.
Exactly. Now, May 6th, we're going to see Canelo Alvarez in a war, because Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., yes, he's going to come in straight ahead, and he's going to get a lot of punches hit. A lot of punches are going to land on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., but he's going to force, I believe, in my opinion, he's going to force Canelo Alvarez into a war, and this is where we're going to see what Canelo is made of.
And if he knocks out Chavez Jr., are they going to say, oh, it was because Chavez drained himself, or it was because, oh, Chavez was not, you know, disciplined? Like, if Canelo stops, because Jr.'s got a great chin. Even though Fanfara, you know, made him quit on his stool, Chavez Jr. still has a great chin. But if Canelo stops him for whatever reason, for cuts, just – has him against the ropes, and the referee says enough. Now, what will be the mindset of Mexican fans?
Well, here's what we got to remember. Fanfara is a 175-pound guy.
No matter
what you think about Chavez, he's not 170-pound. He's a big kid, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, he's not a linebacker. That's not what he does, you know? The thing about this is this, okay, is that I think and every Mexican fan, okay, and this goes all the way to the construction guy, to the detail Mexicano, to the guy that works in the restaurant. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. still carries the pedigree of what we see in Julio Sr., which is a brawler. So if Canelo can make a dent in that, there's going to be a lot of satisfaction. Not the complete satisfaction of what we got filled up at a buffet, but it's going to be a few fucking, you know, a couple of tacos, and we're going to be like, okay, maybe we got something with Canelo. Maybe we have something here. But we have yet to see that.
And to answer your question, a lot of people are still not give Canelo the credit if he does knock out Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., which I don't think he's going to knock him out. Can he beat him? Yes. Can he knock him out? I don't think so. But even if he beats him or knocks him out, I don't think a lot of people are going to give him the credit just because of the reasons you said, that he was weight drained, that, you know, he's not that good of a fighter, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't think that's fair, because if Canelo Alvarez does beat Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., then that is a big feather on his cap, and it kind of opens up the road for people to say that he has a somewhat of a good fighting chance against Gennady Golovkin.
Well, I mean, he got dropped off. Let's patch in another fight fan. Hopefully we answer that question. for you. Area code 812, you're on right now. You're on live right now on Leave It to Me. What's on your mind?
Hey, Felipe. Dave, how you doing? This is Joey, man. How you guys doing?
Hey, Joey.
I'm good, brother. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Just I just tuned in about 10 minutes ago, man, so I did hear the conversation. But let me start off first, Dave and Felipe. I just want to say, man, this past Saturday night, like, that's what I've been waiting for, like, as a fight fan. Like, that card to me, Dave, was for a diehard boxing fan, is what I look for when I pay, when I order a pay-per-view. Like,
right.
Man, I have not, like, them two fights back-to-back, man. I mean, I'm talking about, I was standing up the whole time. Like, I couldn't even, I was just in awe of the action. Like, the fights to me personally were so good that when it went to the cards, I went and made me another drink because I didn't even care who won because I was so pleased by the fight, man. I mean, the
right.
drinks were, and that's why, and I remember when I first started calling, Dave, I told you that I always loved the pay-per-views and stuff. And, like, it just, that feeling, man, it was. I'm glad that it happened, man, because I needed that because I just been disappointed with pay-per-views recently. But, man, this Saturday night, man, it was just awesome. And it just had that big pay-per-view feel. I know the numbers are not good, but, hey,
who cares about the
fan,
numbers, Joe?
I'm satisfied.
You know what's
exactly.
crazy? Right. You know, let me tell you this something, Joe. I'm with you, bro. That was a great night of fights, okay? I enjoyed everything that happened on that weekend. I was excited. I honestly walked away feeling this was a good – all the fights were good. Now, did all the fights leave you with something to talk about? Absolutely. Did the fights leave you thinking that, hey, there could be some bigger things that are going to be online? Absolutely. But I tell you who ruined it for us. Fight fans. Fight fans on social media. You know?
Yeah.
When you had
exactly.
so – I mean, I had so many people contact me and go – oh, it was a clear win for Triple G, and I'm like, fuck, man, did I just witness a fight that I did not see? You know what I mean? I thought it was really close, you know?
Yeah.
Am I conversating with Floyd Mayweather fans where they tell me that it's easy money? This is easy money. It wasn't easy money. I saw a guy that came in with a game plan. A guy that came in with nobody else decided to come in when they faced Golovkin, which is, you know, have a game plan, stick to the game plan, and use that game plan against that person. Did I see Gennady Golovkin have to adjust in some minor league? Absolutely. Those are the ingredients that we want to pay for. That's what I got. I got the ingredients that what makes up my hard-earned money when I decide to dish out for a pay-per-view. Fight fans don't seem to get that. They like to have – because they're so used to somebody pickpocketing them. They're so used to somebody
yeah.
mugging them for their fucking money that they're so content somebody ripping them off that they went in on feel ripped off. They have to make it seem like I got ripped off. Oh, man, this is one clear win. Oh, this is a robbery. Robbery? What the – you know, this word robbery is so loosely used with fight
yeah.
fans that it's now become a dirty word. Am I wrong about this, Felipe? It's become a dirty word in the sport of boxing. Robbery. Robbery is what happened with Gonzalez. Headbutts. They allowed the gruesome of blood misjudge what was going on in the ring. The flurries, the punches, who was more accurate, who was having more control, the dictation, the ring generalship that was happening in the ring. We allowed the display of blood, the color of red, to make you think that the other guy was winning.
Let me
I didn't
ask
see
you
that with Triple G and Danny Jacobs.
Let me ask you this, and I'll ask both of you guys. You guys both watch these fights. You watch the Gonzalez fight against Sol Ruben Tsai, right? And I'm not going to call it a robbery. I'm just going to call it a bad call, okay? Which one was a bigger bad call? The Gonzalez against Sol Ruben Tsai fight or that Maurice Hooker against that Michael Pettis fight back in November? Which one was
Ooh,
a
good question?
Which one was a worse bad call? You know, which fight looked like it could have gone the way that the judges scored it? I think
I have to
watch it
again. I would have to rewatch it again. Honestly, to give you my honest opinion, I would have to Maurice Hooker. But right now, sitting back, Maurice Hooker, that was a big robbery. compared to because of the fact that
I could go
like
with the Soy Rubin. I could go more with the Soy Rubin Tsai decision than with a draw in that other fight with Hooker and Pettis.
Yeah, hey Dave, you know I got a different approach now, man. When I watch fights, like,
go ahead.
And I want to stay in my lane because at the end of the day, that's what I am. I'm a hardcore boxing fan, but like you said it, man. When you get on social media and you start getting with the robbery and who everybody calling me, texting me, hey man, what's your scorecard? I'm like, look, man, I got my phone in my left hand and a drink in my right hand. I ain't writing shit down. I'm not scoring nothing, man. I want to enjoy the fight. So I don't know nothing about scoring. I'm not a judge. Like, if you ask me, I mean, I just want to be. I don't know if I told you guys this. I'm a big WWE fan. I love entertainment. And when I got Saturday Night, was just pure drama. I mean, for that 2 hours straight was just nonstop drama. Like, I was just, and I understand somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose. But man, when you putting two top guys in, you know, everybody's saying Golovkin's slowing down this and that. But when Jacobs is a good competitor, I expect to Gennady get pushed to the limit, and that's what we got. So
good point.
I didn't score the first
night. I'm with you, Joe. I'm one of those guys that, you know what, I got food in front of me. You know, I'm trying to enjoy it. I got drinks in front of me. I'm trying to enjoy what is happening at the moment. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sitting there with a piece of paper going, oh, this guy, oh, he's got five jabs. Oh, left hooks. What I'm watching is what is happening, and my emotions are going with that. You know what I mean?
Yes,
but let me tell
you
this. Where most folks, most emails that I get on Leaving the Ring, they'll go like, Dave, how do you stay neutral? How do I stay neutral? Is I'm watching the fight. That's how I stay neutral.
Mm-hmm.
I watch the fight. I'm not rooting for this guy. I'm not rooting for that guy. I have a prediction, and I'm hoping the prediction is going to roll out, you know, the way I'm saying it. But at the same time, I'm recognizing, you know, when you listen to the HBO commentary, okay, they have an agenda. And the agenda is to watch the particular person who they're being told is going to be the winner. I'm not being told by anybody because like you,
no, Joe. I don't agree with you. They do have an agenda, but they don't. They're not being told who's going to be the winner. They have the agenda to talk up the guy that they have an exclusive contract with, which is Gennady Golovkin.
Which is
but
the guy that's
being
expected to win, Felipe.
Okay.
That is the guy that's
win,
being expected
that's
to a, win. Come on.
You said,
that is
you
the
said,
agenda.
Oh, the guy that is to be the winner. No, not to be the winner. The guy that they have the exclusive contract with. That's the guy they're going to talk up. Just like on the...
When Manny Pacquiao was finally being thrown under the bus by HBO with Timothy Bradley, how many of the guys from HBO commentary were talking up Bradley and not Manny Pacquiao?
Let me tell you this. The Mexican on the Mexican channel, on the Azteca
channel.
We're
not talking about the Mexican channel. We're talking about
HBO. I'm giving you the example.
There is no example there, Felipe.
Okay, forget
we're talking
forget
about
the agenda.
We're not talking
the
about
agenda,
the Mexican channel.
The agenda that the commentary.
You see what I got to deal with, Joe? Do you see what I got to deal with? This is a bad marriage,
the agenda,
bro.
The agenda that the commentary have. The Mexican TV network had Jacob winning 117-111.
With the same thing with the UK. The UK had him up, I believe, by 2 points.
No, this guy scored it 9-3. 9-3, they scored Jacobs winning that fight. Why? Because they want to make it, they want to try to sell the Gennady Golovkin-Canelo fight even better. That Golovkin is not that good. And there's going to be a more competitive fight than people expect against Canelo. And that's the agenda that the Mexican network is selling.
Okay,
why?
So why
because
would you not believe that HBO was trying to sell their guy? Which
oh,
is
I didn't say they didn't have
Gennady
an agenda. I just didn't like the way that you described their agenda.
But that is their agenda.
Their agenda is to protect the fighter they have the exclusive contract with, not the guy that they were told
is always going to say what is the excellence or more impressiveness of what the other guy that is what the guy that they're under contract with is doing. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying me and you or Joe, we don't do that because we don't have no exclusive contract with the guy. We're watching a fight. And the fight we're watching, We're going to call for every little thing that's happening in front of us because there's no exclusiveness that we have with these guys. Am I right about that or am I wrong?
You're right.
I agree, yes.
You know, and I think that's fight fans have to be fair about that. But at the same time, there was plenty of media cheerleaders too that honestly influence a lot of fans and followers on Twitter or Facebook or whatever social media you're using. They're going to be clouded with their thoughts because they're looking at they're only paying attention to one guy tweeting saying like, look at this. Oh, his weight. Oh, yeah. Opposite. Well, Triple G did it great because he got in there with 100 and he got in with the light heavyweight or because of this reason and that reason. In reality, both guys went in with the best advantages they could. The truth is nobody wants to give Danny J. The guys that honestly that were saying Danny Jacobs had no reason, no. There was no possibility he could have given a good fight are the ones that are honestly crying about the fact that it went 12 rounds. Am I right or am I wrong?
I think Joey? You're right, Dave. I think you're right.
Right?
Yeah, I kind of
I mean, they're
you.
Really
yes,
honestly more upset that, and I said this, they're more pissed off that Danny didn't stay down on the fourth round. They're more pissed off that Danny had a game plan. They're more pissed off that he went 12 rounds, and they're the only ones making excuses for Golovkin. And I find that to be really weird. It's
the same thing that
the Mayweather fans are doing. They do. You know what I mean? The Mayweather fans do the exact same thing. They make excuses for their guy. It's weird.
That's what I was reading a lot too, Dave and Felipe. Is everybody saying, "Oh, the age is catching up to Golovkin, and he's looking like he's slowing." My thing is this: what I saw is Jacobs was just like you said, man. He had a game plan, and he's just tough. He figured it out. You know, the second half of the fight, he was coming on strong. So, like I said, man, at the end of the day, man, I was a satisfied boxing customer and fan. And I'm just happy, man. 2017, Dave. We went through a rough 2016, but
yes,
the fans
we did.
That stuck through, for the fans that you know stuck together and encouraged each other to hold on, man. It's gonna be a good ride this spring and summer, man. Maybe you're heading into the fall.
You know,
so,
Joe,
let me
ask you guys, both of you guys, this question, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing what we saw with Golovkin, okay. Seeing that he is human, seeing that I posed this question to Abel Sanchez back in, 2014, maybe 15. I don't even remember. I would have to repost that interview. What I asked of Abel Sanchez was this, okay? And I said this, I'm not going to jump on the train, this train of like the way Lucas Matisse, everybody was jumping on, until I see Triple G challenge in terms of a guy can take your punch, where a guy can adjust and a guy can take you 12 rounds, then I'll jump on that train. I'm going to tell you this, Felipe and Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I am on the train, finally, with Golovkin, and that's because I finally saw a guy that can be taken 12 rounds, which tells me that he's got to readjust. He's actually got to make some changes in his next fight. Why? Because in the layman terms of what people are saying about the kid right now is he's been exposed. And when I see a fighter like this, and this is why I like Gonzalez, Felipe, because the fact that you're not riding on your pound for pound, you know, a label, you're actually putting it to the test. You're trying to find out, are you really that good? Is Gennady Golovkin really that good? When you challenge yourself, when you decide to take on different styles, because when I see guys go, oh, it's his age, I finally see that his age is catching up. Well, shit. Cassie Numa was by far the only guy that was a little bit tricky, but he didn't last till 8 rounds, right? That I was waiting for a guy to see if it made Triple G maybe think a little bit more. And I saw that Saturday night. I don't know about you guys, but I like to see guys that I think that are probably top tier of the sport be challenged, to make them think, to actually make them work for their money. I want
yeah,
to
but
see
to
that.
me, this is going to be the biggest challenge at 160 pounds for Gennady Golovkin. There's no other fighter out there that has the tools and the skill set at 160 pounds that Daniel Jacobs does.
But that was good enough, wasn't it? But isn't that good enough, though? Because at 160, if there was no Danny Jacobs, if there was no Danny Jacobs at 160, then the void is going to be, well, who did he face that could move? Who is he going to face that would take his punch and take him 12 rounds?
But his job is not over. His job is not over at 160. He still needs that WBO belt, and that's why he's going to go after. But the certain demographic is going to be calling out for Gennady Golovkin to move up to 168 pounds, and I think that is not right,
because
he needs to go up when he wants to go up, and his job is not done at 160 pounds yet.
Look, if you're going to go up to 160 pounds, which I think that most detractors are asking for of Triple G, it's because you want to see the guy lose, okay? Now, Charlo, who is from the PBC, who now has said that, now he's going to want to campaign at 160, left 154. That is a guy that now could be a strong possibility as an opponent for Gennady Golovkin. The only way, though, if he's going to be, he's a strong opponent in terms of a name, right? But he's not, he's not a drawing opponent for Gennady to go, I have to fight him because he has a title. He needs the title. You get him in there with Danny Jacobs, which is the guy that gave the most talk about out towards Golovkin, the most, divide in terms of who you thought won that fight and gave him the most tussle out of his, how many fights he's had? 36, 30? I don't even know right now. Out of his career, right? Would be Charlo, but he's got to have something substantial to be intriguing for him to decide to say, hey, I'm going to stay here at 160 pounds, Felipe, right?
Yeah, I don't think that Charlo has enough to offer Gennady Golovkin for him to want to get in the ring with him. Fight for Gennady Golovkin's belts that he already has. There's only two guys left at 160 pounds that Gennady Golovkin should be interested in. Billy Joe Saunders, because he has a WBO belt, and Saul Canelo Alvarez, because that's the biggest money fight that Gennady Golovkin can make. Other than that...
Yeah, those are the two things. Those are the only two things. Charlo does not bring that, the twin. He doesn't bring that. He doesn't bring any of that at the moment. He brings it to hardcore boxing fans that really want to see Gennady Golovkin to get in there and test himself with the best available 160-pounder. But I think the realistic move is to go against Daniel Jacobs again. But why would you want to do that again to yourself? Really quick before we continue with this conversation, Joe, do you have anything else you want to add on, bro? Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I appreciate you guys keeping me on. Just one more thing, guys, before I get out of here. Are you going to preview tomorrow's card on ESPN? I've been hearing a lot of things about Quigley, but I don't really know nothing about him. Are you going to preview later and I'll listen in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Felipe, he has a lot to say about Quigley and knows a lot about him. We both do. So, definitely,
okay,
man. We'll put you back on hold.
Man.
Okay,
hey,
brother.
Hey, you guys take care. And boxing fans, rejoice, man. It's going to be a great year.
It's been a great year, brother.
You.
Thank you, man.
Thanks, Joey.
Okay.
But going back, Felipe, when you go back with Charlo, which I've seen this. I've been watching this. Folks – I think I got like literally 12 emails on the Leaving the Ring Gmail asking me and you for the boxing spotlight, should there be a demand with Charlo and Gennady Golovkin? And I was like, no. Why would there be? Why should you have that as a demand? Charlo hasn't done anything at 160. If anything, Charlo has to make a case for himself to be even brought into the conversation against Triple G at this moment.
Now, to a certain extent, he should be ranked, because usually they do that. The sanctioning bodies, when you're a world champion at one weight class and you leave the belt vacant, you go up to the next weight class, they usually rank you in the top 10. Okay, but I do agree with you that he has not done anything at 160 to deserve a fight yet with Gennady Golovkin. And just as far as the business side of it, I don't see – he doesn't bring anything to the table on the business sense for Gennady Golovkin to say, to even mention his name. You know, he doesn't have the WBO belt, and he cannot make Gennady Golovkin more money than Saul Canelo Alvarez can. So until he does one of those two things, beat Billy Joe Saunders or beat a known name in a devastating or dominating fashion for people to pay attention to Charlo, to, is it Jermell or Jermell? One of the two. Then there's no point for Gennady Golovkin to even consider.
And that's where I go. Look, this is where I agree with some of our colleagues, especially some that are on the Leave It in the Ring Network. And when it comes to bouts matter, that's a leverage of what a bout does. You know what I mean? It makes the recognition of another fighter to go, okay, this is why I need to fight him. Because at the end of the day, all fighters, they like to have that in the casing. Am I right or am I wrong? They need that in the case. In the living room, you know, wherever they decide to place it, it's got to be their front view so people can go like, oh, shit. So you did win a title. You are a champion, you know. And that's something that Charlo had maybe accomplished at 154, but not at 160, you know. Danny Jacobs, where does he go? I mean, people are saying, should Danny Jacobs go after Charlo because he's in 160?
Why?
You know, in the PBC world, maybe, but in the boxing world, like you said, why? Why? Why would you do that?
If I was Daniel Jacobs, I mean, at 160, you know, ask for the rematch, obviously, which is deserved, maybe not immediate, but do ask for the rematch. Or try to win yourself back into rematch contention by beating a David Lemieux or by beating a Billy Joe Saunders or by beating a Saul Canelo Alvarez. Other than that, I don't know where else he could go in that 160.
Well, let's point this out. BJ Saunders and Gennady Golovkin are talking about a June match in Kazakhstan, okay? Now,
Kazakhstan. Why the hell would they go to Pakistan? It's not Amir Khan.
Listen. Let me finish my thought here, okay? Now.
Kazakhstan.
Whatever. You know what I said.
Kazakhstan.
Okay?
Oh, my God.
Okay? Just like you can't save it. You can't say that new win. You were saying some other bullshit.
That new win.
Okay, listen, Felipe, because I'm going to teach you something here. Like I always do.
Wow.
Every time we come on, every goddamn weekend, a week on Wednesday, on Leaving the Ring, I always teach you something. You walk away with something where you go like, holy shit, I just learned something from Dave.
Yeah, I walk away.
From Leaving the Ring.
I walk away asking myself, why the fuck am I doing this show?
No, you walk away texting me, Dave, thank you very much for allowing me to be on Leaving the Ring Radio. Okay. Let me finish this, okay? All right. If I was Danny Jacobs, and tell me that he shouldn't do this. Because Danny Jacobs felt like he was the winner. He felt, and rightfully so. It was that close of a fight. He didn't get knocked out. He wasn't really completely dominated. As much as the little Gennady cheerleaders in the world want to say it was a clear win, it wasn't a clear win. It was not a clear win. There was a lot of swing rounds in that fight that could have determined it to be a draw. Right? If I was Danny Jacobs and part of his team, I would right now be saying to him, hey, you need to press the BJ Saunders fight. You need to ask for that fight. You need to be the guy that's in between that. Make BJ Saunders, because you already know that his agenda has been to bounce out of a fight. His agenda has been to say, I want this fight, but then he jumps out of it and says, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that fight, right? He may go for the lesser threat, which he may think is Daniel Jacobs.
I don't know. That's a tough sell right there. That's a tough sell.
It's not a tough sell. If you're the right guy and you have the right PR, okay?
Which he doesn't.
Well, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't. He don't even have a PR. That's the sad part. There's no PR.
Exactly.
You know. But, you know, if Danny Jacobs is smart, he's going to be going like, look, I'm the guy, and he's praised this. I felt like I won. Well, then you should extend that. I won. I beat Gennady Golovkin. I should fight you, BJ Saunders. You should be fighting the bigger threat. If you beat me, then your fight's going to be bigger against Golovkin. That to me is the biggest PR that he could use right now. That is the biggest move that he could use, going, hey, I want this, I want that. But the fact is that you know, Gennady Golovkin, the biggest money that BJ Saunders is going to get is going overseas. I'm not going overseas, but going to the home country of Gennady Golovkin, right? He's not going to get that much money fighting, you know, Danny Jacobs here in the States. The money's not here. The money's with Golovkin. That's the only downfall. But to get in the mind, to get into the mix, to continue to be in the mix of mouths and conversations is to say, BJ Saunders, you should fight me. Because I'm the guy that really, really beat Gennady Golovkin. I'm the guy that most people are thinking they're having mixed feelings in terms of saying that I might have had a draw, or he wasn't that dominant. I had the game plan to beat him. If you can beat me, then you have more of a strong possibility of not of being the guy to beat Gennady Golovkin and not be a major underdog the way I was. But like you said, Felipe doesn't have a good PR, and also. Let's be realistic. The money is not here in the United States for BJ Saunders to go, yeah, I'll fight Daniel Jacobs. But, you know, you want to up your stature of the chance, your status of chance of beating in the gambling department. You might want to go with Daniel Jacobs.
Let's
route.
Move on. Let's move on, David, because according to what I'm seeing, we only got about 11 minutes left on the show. So in the semi-main event of the night, former undefeated Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez suffered his first loss after 46 straight wins when he was on a short end of a majority decision against number two ranked Cesar Quet Soy Rubinsai, with scores of 114. You probably pass out if you try to pronounce that. With scores of 114, 112 two times, and 113, 113. So we could spend an hour and a half on this fight. But, David, I got my idea of what should be next for Chocolatito Gonzalez. Give me very, very quickly what you think should be next for Chocolatito Gonzalez at this point in his career.
Well, because of the way Carlos looked, Cuadros is the way he looked on his last on that same card, right? On that same night, it didn't look that great. If Gonzalez was, I think Gonzalez needs some time. Honestly, I think he needs rest. I don't know what you think. I mean, look at his run right now at 115, one after another, war after war, and we got to say that 115 is not his best weight, but I think we need to give him a bit of a rest. But if he was to take an immediate match, which he's asking for a rematch, and I believe the WBC is asking for that rematch, right? Immediate rematch. I wouldn't do it. I would go for Carlos.
I wouldn't go for either one of them. What you said right now is, you know, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, is that hit at 115 pounds, it's a very tough division for Chocolatito. You know, going up four weight divisions from his original weight class of straw weight, 105 pounds. So, like many people have said, you know, this is going to be every fight for Chocolatito at this weight class because he's giving up so much in weight advantage. So, for me, his best bet is a fight that a lot of people still want to see, and it is against Juan Francisco El Gallito Estrada. Why?
Yes.
Because that's going to be his biggest purse. It's not going to be as big as this one, $550,000, but it's still going to be relatively big. It's still a fight that you could sell to HBO, and it's going to be a guy against a guy who is not as big as the other 115-pounder. He's not
and
a
it's actually
100-
more sellable now. Yeah, let me ask you this, Felipe.
Yeah.
Is it more sellable now because of the way he looked? Yeah. You know, I think it is. You know, I mean, here's the thing, and it goes back with people on social media that are really shitty. Now saying like, oh, this is the guy that we, you know, was supposed to be pound for pound. Well, I go back and I like I said, I'm not sure if it was, I was talking to you about this, about the whole pound for pound thing? Was this what with Gabriel Montoya? Where I said,
it wasn't.
You know, what I like about Gonzalez is that he didn't sit on that label. He decided to challenge himself. And we're seeing him now, right now, try to use what people have been recognizing in the last few years, what he could produce, which is the ability to box. The power isn't there, Felipe, but the guy can box his ass.
And the heart of a champion, the great of a champion.
Oh my God! So if you were not a fan of him in the beginning, which I wasn't, because I'm one of those guys that are very critical, and you know this about me. But I'm
an
hard to please.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm very hard to please. I'm very critical in terms of when I see a guy sit on the pound for pound category, like a Lomachenko, a Gennady Golovkin, et cetera, where they're very dominant and they know they can be dominant and they sit on that. I'm not impressed. Where Robin Chocolito Gonzalez, you saw that, but then he said, you know what? I'm gonna jump up. I'm gonna leave 105. I'm gonna go 115. And I'm going to challenge myself with the bigger guys. Now, these bigger guys are not – they're not more talented than him when it comes to boxing, but they're stronger, and they can take his punch. So when they can take their punch, they can rail in their punches. And when you see Gonzalez go, holy shit, I'm not able to bully them back. I'm not able to keep them off at the end of my punches because they're closing in on me. I got to box. To me – that is a Hall of Famer, Felipe. To me, that is a guy where you got to sit back and appreciate and go, wow, wow, what a heart. What a set of balls this man has. What an example of what boxing is supposed to be about. It's about challenging yourself. It's not always about being the most dominant guy, not always having the three or four, you know, advantages. But it making your equalness be equal with the guy that has the less talent that you bring to the ring, and that's what I like about Gonzalez right now at this moment.
I agree. Let's just see what happens with him next. Now moving on, going because we still got to do that really quick preview.
The good, the bad, and ugly.
A preview for the fight for tomorrow for Joey. And the MMA, moving on, going back to Friday night from the theater inside Madison Square Garden, Top Rank on Unimas gave us the debut of highly touted Irish amateur Michael Conlan after what was called the longest ring walk for a pro debut, and accompanied by MMA star Conor McGregor, Conlan finished off Tim Ibarra in the third round of a super bantamweight six with an uncontested flurry of punches. You mentioned earlier in a text to me earlier today that you weren't that impressed with Conlan. I say
right.
I wasn't all that impressed, but I wasn't expecting much. I mean, the guy is in his first professional fight. He is fighting in front of a sold-out Irish crowd in the mecca of boxing, the Madison Square Garden, with Conor McGregor walking him in. So the one thing that you want from the kid is for him to be focused and for him to be confident, and he proved that inside that ring. Yes, he squares up when he throws the right, and he does open up a lot
confident.
When he throws the power punches. Right. But he was confident, and that's what you want in your first fight as a pro debuter. Expecting any more, you're expecting too much, like always.
Listen. Confident, absolutely. Overconfident and cocky, I don't care for. I got overconfident and cocky. The longest ring walk.
He can't blame the kid for that.
We're going to move on to the subject, but I'm going to give you my point about this, okay? Is that boxing is catching up to the entertainment value, which they need to. They have to be competitive in this sport, in this entertainment of sports. You got to catch up with the flamboyantness, right? You got to catch up to the WWE. And Top Rank, as always, this is the reason why they've been in the business for so many years, Felipe, is they have to reinvent themselves, right? They reinvented themselves. They had Conor McGregor in there. They had an attendance of what was it? 19,000 people inside of the Madison Square Garden. Okay. And No, no, that was for the Triple G. But I mean,
yeah,
there was a large
exactly.
attendance for Michael, for an Irish kid. But what I was watching was a play of entertainment. What I watched from Michael was not the display of promise of what I've seen from like a Bochito Mojado, a Miguel Cotto, Fernando Vargas, Oscar De La Hoya, David Reed, those guys that are coming from the Olympics, where you saw something, they were tight. They came out to do business. Where I saw a guy was drop his hands, be way too cocky, way too confident, and was more there for a show, not to display why he should be a guy to be reckoned with in that division. Now,
like
when you tell me you're a much bigger guy than the guy that has displayed his ability in that way, you're just a mouthpiece.
I like
you're
what I saw.
You're too early in the game, huh?
I like what I saw. And now, going back even a bit further to two Saturdays ago, former IBF middleweight champion David Lemieux scored a devastating left hook knockout over former world title challenger Curtis Stevens in the third round. Stevens was taken to a hospital afterwards for observation, but was released quickly thereafter. Quick notes, former WBO welterweight champion Jesse Vargas says to be coming back in late May, early June, and wants a rematch with Tim Bradley. 43-year-old Juan Manuel Marquez has put an ultimatum on Miguel Cotto. If he wants to fight, it has to happen at 147 pounds and not in New York. Former Olympian Vanes Marirosian recently announced he signed an exclusive promotional contract with Don King. Marirosian began his career with Top Rank, then Al Heyman, and now King. And the WBA ordered a heavyweight bout between 45-year-old Shannon Briggs and Fresno Kendall for its quote-unquote regular title. The fight is set for June 3rd in a site to be determined, but is suspected to be in Hollywood, Florida. And lastly, the WBA also stated it will soon order a rematch between the featherweight quote-unquote super champion Leo Santa Cruz and their regular champion Abner Mattis to determine one title holder in the 126-pound division. Before we go,
I like that fight.
One thing I want to say about Vanes Martirosyan, that he was complaining that he wasn't getting enough fights under the PBC, and then he signed with Don King. And then he signed with Don King. That was
I know. I was about to say that. I'm like, when I read that, I'm like, and then you signed with Don King. Like, are you freaking kidding? You know
one
what?
Minute left.
There's got to be
one
a point
left.
Where you say, listen. There's got to be a point where you say, the mental is you. You got some mental problems.
You're the common denominator of the problem here. Okay. Let's say goodbye, David. We got 45 seconds. Let's not get cut off.
Well, you want to do the bad and the good and the ugly really quick?
We don't got time.
Oh, I don't think we have. Yeah.
No.
I don't think we have that much time for that. Anyways, but you know what? Hey, we had a rocky start here on Leaving the Ring. Don't forget, every Monday we got the next round. Every Wednesday you got Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Felipe Leon. Every other Thursday, the next round. Hey, I'm going to tell you this. Even if you're not a female boxing fan, you have to tune in. It is a great show. A lot of information. I was telling Felipe today, we're not pushing that show enough. There's a lot of great content that's being missed and people are not being informed about. Trust me, if you love boxing, this is something you need to tune in and listen to. Great, great. And Felipe did a one-man show yesterday last week by himself. Yeah. You know, I mean, if you can get past the fact that Felipe breathes hard on the microphone and sucks his own saliva in between his interview, trust me, some great stuff.
Wow.
Felipe.
That's the way to sell it. Hey, fairly quickly here, because it looks like we have another 15 minutes on the recording. I guess we do have time for the bad, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it's not live, but people will be able to listen to it on the podcast.
I'm not sure. Okay, well, let's do it anyway. So let's go with the good, the bad, and the ugly, and we'll find out whether or not it's going to be recorded.
The good. The bad. The ugly, ugly, ugly.
So here are our segment here for the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm Absolutely the Good was the 19K inside the Madison Square Garden for Gennady Golovkin and Daniel Jacobs. It sold out for the night for Colin. So that was obviously fantastic. Now, the numbers for the pay-per-view weren't that great, Felipe, I guess. You know, I mean, there was the complaint there. There was a lot of folks that were, if you're going to bag on against Triple G, that was one of the things that's going to be the tactic to downplay what happened on that Saturday night. But the bad, what was the bad, Felipe?
The bad was the cuss caused by those numerous headbutts by Sincericat, Soy Room, Insight on Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez, which many believe impressed the judges so much that they gave the fight to the Thai fighter.
Now, if you believe that Gonzalez lost that fight, I have to question what were you watching, because I did not see. I was waiting to see what Gonzalez was doing that was so bad that led for the judges to go like, he's losing that fight. The ugly was the decision based out of that fight there. You know, Zumzagzi? Whatever last.
Wow, time. Don't even try it. Don't just say sore roving
sore. Side. Sore loser versus right. They want to read, let me tell you this. Gonzalez people, they wanted to come on today, but we just couldn't get that all tied up. You know, I'm sorry. I'm actually was reading their text right now. They said sorry. They were sending us a number. We only got 10 minutes. Well, not even 10 minutes. This is 10 minutes ago. So maybe we can get them on next week, the team of Gonzalez, because they did want to talk about it here on Leaving the Ring, as well as Laura. Laura wants to come on Leaving the Ring, but it was just a little too late. I just got the text right now that Laura also wants to be on Leaving the Ring to talk about Danny Jacobs' performance. So maybe next week we can bring them both back on, bring them both on the show, and we can get their feedback here. But the ugly was that decision. It wasn't very good for boxing. And so you would say the douchebag of the week would be the judges of that night, judging it against Gonzalez. So as our way out of the show, we'll play that song for everybody. That song, the popular song that everybody likes from Leaving the Ring. Reminder, this is the song that Felipe goes to bed to every night in his head because, you know, the guy was born.
Wow.
Right, Felipe?
You there
know,
you go.
I'm just, whatever. You know, so those were the judges there that judged against Romana Gonzalez, thinking that he lost. And really, because they were judging off that blood, they weren't judging off the punches. Almost the same way that the people on Twitter and Facebook and anything else from Instagram all the way back down to any social media were saying this was a clear-cut win for Gennady Golovkin. You weren't watching the fight. So you, too, are born an asshole. Anyways, Felipe, until next week, man, and hopefully we don't get a rocky start like we did this morning.
Yeah.
I mean, today at 6:30. I mean, this was shitty. You know, I didn't know if we were on. You weren't on. I didn't know if I could hear you. You know, you could hear me. I can hear you. It was really bad. And we were both coming in really choppy. Yeah, but it worked out. We worked out, you know. And fortunately, we were able to dodge and slip punches better than the way Gonzalez was doing against the headbutts against us. Sore. Right?
There you go. You're a wordsmith, my friend. You're a wordsmith. Yeah.
I am. I'm learning from you. I'm learning for you, my friend. All right, man. You have a good night. Anyways, have a good weekend, everybody. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. West Side to be bride. Orderly.